Okay, the recorder's on. This is World Affairs Monthly, and I have Mr. Mike Hirschberg on the line. He's the executive director of the Vertical Flight Society in Fairfax, Virginia. And, of course, they can be found on the net at vtol.org. Mike, once again, it's good to talk to you, and I'm glad that you're, well, we're joking around here, but you know, you're at home, I'm at home. That's good?
There you go.
Yep. Okay. Well, I'm going to say once again, it's kind of fun, you know, and I'm not expecting any kind of answer, and this is just fun, you know. Maybe it's not fun. No. Your logo is, Vertical Flight Society logo is a hummingbird, and I'm on Hummingbird Court. I want to know why you came up with that logo. No. Well, are we trying to do this kind of flight, you know, where like a hummingbird, or are we trying to just move people around the best way we can? I mean, maybe that's a weird question, but, you know.
We picked the hummingbird because it's the only bird that can hover and fly backwards, and that's what, you know, helicopters and now, you know, drones and eVTOL aircraft can do
yeah.
as well. But, you know, we represent the innovators, the engineers, scientists, the inventors who come up with new technologies to improve, you know, existing helicopters and existing types of aircraft, as well as, you know, those farther out thinkers who are coming up with, you know,
yeah.
something kind of more off the wall, like
yeah.
eVTOL and things like that.
Yeah.
So technology, just for technology's sake, is interesting, but it's not useful. So
that's right.
At the end of the day, you've got to have something that provides a service or a benefit to
mm-hmm.
society, and that's really any engineer's or any inventor's goal, is to make something that's useful.
Yeah. No. Excellent. That's worth the interview right there. Now, brilliant statement. Now, I'm just gonna, you know, this may sound like I'm beating my own chest and my own family, but you know, Christoph, my son, you know him. 17 hours ago, I tweeted at Destructive Capital Twitter. My son, PachariTechnologies.com, has invented technology which will basically supersede global hydrocarbon industry. Liquid hydrocarbons not going away anytime soon, but will compete with hydrogen combusted in our internal combustion engines. Emission-free energy from the sun, our sun, amazing. And then I describe actually what he's proposing. So we would have photovoltaic panels all over the place, you know, where there's good irradiance. That generates electricity. Then we create hydrogen. Then we create ammonia from the hydrogen, and ammonia would serve as an energy carrier, equivalent to liquid hydrogens that we use today. Then we crack or reform, call it reform, on board the vehicle using nickel oxide back into hydrogen. Then that hydrogen's combusted in internal combustion engines that we use now. And this, of course, equals energy for mobility. Only emission will be water. There will be some NOx, but not very much. Yes, totally sustainable, because photovoltaic has impressive energy return on investment using abundant silica. But reducing silica to silicon produces CO2. And I write, hilarious, you cannot get energy without producing CO2. CO2 is not a danger, but is essential and very favorable for the earth. The more, the better. It is a fertilizer. Anyway, kind of, you know, having fun there. But you know, if we can power these different, how do you put it? We call them eVTOL, you know, eVTOL, but we can power them with hydrogen, with batteries. I mean, with, you know, we can look into all the options, right? And I
Absolutely.
Thought you could describe what you're thinking at the moment, because like you say, engineers have to come up with something that's really useful and beneficial.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's, those are all good comments and all good thoughts. We are very we're very bullish on hydrogen for the in the, I'll say, mid to farther future.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it seems like hydrogen for aviation has always been, you know, 5 or 10 years away. And now
yeah.
now it really seems like it's gonna be, you know,
okay.
5 to 10 years
so
away.
So it's close, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of research going on in hydrogen, particularly hydrogen fuel cells. Europe is investing, you know, billions of euros in research for aviation as part of the COVID
mm-hmm.
stimulus package that they did.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of work in the U.S. and particularly a lot in Japan with companies like Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
There are quite a number of hydrogen charging stations, both in California and in the northeast of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So hydrogen for ground transportation mm-hmm. is starting to take off. And as you mentioned, if you can use solar power mm-hmm. and generate hydrogen on site, then you don't have to worry about doing a lot of shipping and things like that. I mean,
yeah.
it is a process, and it takes
yeah. takes time.
You know, you got to put a lot of solar panels out there, or you got to have a lot of other materials, mm-hmm. things like that. But yeah, there's a number of different ways, like you described, either to combust the hydrogen or to use hydrogen fuel cells. But we recently started a hydrogen eVTOL council just to have monthly meetings to
Great.
Talk about the advances and some of the technologies, and mm-hmm. we're starting to think it's really promising.
Yeah. Now, you know, I was kind of stunned when Christoph had, again, I'm not advertising him, I'm just saying that, you know, these are the facts. He was worried about cracking ammonia into hydrogen. Of course, we got to use ammonia, not hydrogen, because ammonia is a suitable energy carrier. And I guess ruthenium is one of the materials that we could use, but it's pretty rare and expensive. But then he realized you can use nickel oxide. So we really don't have any choice but to use the cheaper one. And he said the typical cracker would cost about $1,000. So, you know, we can actually have this, you know, I guess these environmentalists are going to have a dream, a wet dream. I mean, they're going to be stunned when they realize that we can use the energy from the sun to basically do everything we want if we use hydrogen.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done to get to that, but that would be great.
Amazing.
And we hope that we can get to that future.
Yeah. Now batteries, by contrast, don't have that much energy per weight, you know, density.
Correct.
Okay, now, so that limits us, and batteries are also, it depends, but, you know, you get really powerful ones, they could go for 10 years or 7, you know, the more you heat them up when you charge them, the less longer they're going to live, you know, and survive. So we have expensive batteries, and that's a limitation. But I'm not saying batteries are not good. I mean, for short flights, we can use batteries. But still, you know, batteries are probably not all that useful in the long run. What's your thought
on
that?
Yeah, I mean, batteries are very limited. It's something like 5% of the energy density of a fossil fuel.
Yeah, that's right.
Is all you can get out of a battery. So it's kerosene or jet fuel is 20 times more powerful than a battery.
Right.
But if you want to do things like an electric VTOL aircraft where you've got the electricity distributed around the aircraft instead of having an engine driving a gearbox and a transmission and going mm-hmm. to a rotor with a bunch of, you know, giant, really heavy duty and heavy and complex and expensive mechanical transmissions, if you can take and basically distribute the power through wires, so power by wire around the aircraft, then you can come up with these new configurations, and they can have wings, and they can be much more efficient. So they'll be terrible at hovering and takeoff and landing, but much more efficient in cruise flight. So
sure.
that is a transformational capability to have this electric power.
Yeah.
But as you mentioned, batteries suck. They're nowhere near what regular fossil fuels can.
Yeah.
Now, in contrast, hydrogen has over three times the energy density of the mass density of fossil fuel.
Yeah.
So that much less volume density. It's like I think it's about a third of the volumetric density, but three times the weight density of fossil fuel. So they have tremendous advantages and,
Mike,
and also
stuff.
Disadvantages.
You know your stuff. That's good. Yeah. No, yeah. Now, by volume, hydrogen is kind of a pain in the butt, right? I mean, it's large. Okay, but so...
I mean, it's by volume, it's about the same as batteries, because the batteries also are not very... also take up a lot of volume.
Right.
But they have... I'm looking at a graph here. I don't know.
Okay.
It's 100 times, I guess, more than battery power per weight.
Yeah, okay. But, you know, if we want to achieve what the hummingbird does. Do you think we're going to be able to do that if we have this system? You know, I'm just thinking, my son, Christoph, is amazing. You know, he might have just saved the world, you know, a couple of days ago. But, you know, if we can use the energy sun, create hydrogen, and we have enough power, you know, to pretty much do what a hummingbird does. And I assume the hummingbird is able to do what he does because he has a lot of power. He's very lightweight. He has low payload, you know, but he has those wings. And boy, I see him all the time here. We live on hummingbird.
They're incredible animals.
Yeah, they are.
And they can do that because they're so small. I mean, basically the size of a bug.
Yeah.
Of a very large bug. In fact, right now we have our 17-year cicada. So there's just swarms of cicada flying around.
Okay.
They look just like hummingbirds.
I see.
But when you're that small, you can beat your wings at thousands of times a minute or whatever
yeah.
it is. So it's incredible.
Yeah.
But as you scale things up, the
yeah.
bigger they get, you know, like, you know, an elephant can only get, you know, 1 or 2 feet off the ground at a time.
Yeah.
So
okay.
There's a huge power increase the bigger you get. But,
right.
you know, helicopters can hover like a hummingbird, but they use fossil fuels and they emit
yeah.
harmful emissions.
Yes.
So
yes.
electric, and particularly hydrogen electric, really have the potential for having, you know, there's still going to be some costs,
mm-hmm.
some environmental costs
with
any kind of energy production, but hopefully a lot less than what we're using now.
I brought this up. Thank you. Thank you for that comment there. I agree with you. Now, I brought this up last time. The helicopter, the ordinary helicopter, is very noisy. And apparently it's a low frequency, so it's pretty darn, for a lot of people, it's troublesome noise.
Mm-hmm.
But the eVTOL machine is a higher frequency. Maybe same decibel, but it doesn't bother people as much. Now, are we going to see demonstrations? Because there's a lot of, it seems to be a lot of secrecy. I know these Chinese in Guangzhou are doing, you know, the EHang, but, we don't really see much demonstration of this technology yet, right? And I wondered if you have some comment on that. Yeah, what about the noise and what about
yeah.
the demonstration? Yeah.
So the demonstrations so far have shown that they're really quiet. I mean, there's been some video demonstrations.
Okay.
There's been some live demonstrations. Volocopter in Germany, I think it was in Stuttgart a year or so ago. I guess it was before COVID, so a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Did a demonstration in front of thousands of people, and they're like, wow, that was pretty cool. You know, you can
yeah.
barely hear it.
Okay, great.
Now, as things get larger, I mean, it's easy to make something small quiet, but as
okay.
you get larger, you still need to... there's lots of engineering and scientific ways to try and make things quieter. So,
okay.
But you're absolutely right. The large diameter rotor blades are why a helicopter can hover
yep.
efficiently, but that lower frequency penetrates and penetrates buildings more, and it goes for longer. It propagates for longer through the atmosphere, so
okay.
more people hear it.
That's right.
So the higher frequencies and the lighter weight, and a number of the other reasons
okay.
make them quieter.
That's pretty cool, and that's great, because Christoph was arguing to me that the noise was probably one of the main reasons the helicopter was not as successful as people had hoped it would be.
Right.
Right,
because
okay.
people don't want them flying into their cities, but
yeah.
that's where they're, you know, if you look at the, that's where they're most, would be most useful.
Right.
If you look at, what's been proposed for eVTOL for air taxis, it's, hopping from one side of the city.
Right.
I live in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And if I want to get from, Virginia side to the Maryland side to, College Park, just,
yeah.
It's only, 10 miles as the eVTOL flies, but it's an hour drive.
Yeah.
And, even in moderate traffic. So
yeah. Yeah.
It's
easy
to see how
yeah.
short distances to Baltimore instead of being, 2 hour drive will be 15 minutes by
right.
Flight. So there's definitely and helicopters can't do that
no.
because they're louder than people want to hear.
Yeah. And of course, what about the danger? I think helicopters are perceived as dangerous, because they are, they got these big rotors, 25 feet long, and they're really loud, and there are accidents, and, a high number of accidents compared to commercial aircraft, right? So
airliners are the the unbeatable standard in safety, because
yeah.
I mean, in the U.S., there hasn't been a airline crash that's resulted in somebody, you know, losing their life in like 15 years. So
okay.
that's the standard that we should strive for, and mm-hmm. that's the standard the public should accept. Now, mm-hmm. small airplanes crash a lot.
That's right.
Because it's a combination of different factors. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's private pilots,
mm-hmm.
Pilots making bad decisions. It might be, you know, not as much maintenance maintenance mm-hmm. Hours and
sure.
time and money goes into as an airliner. So helicopters are not as safe as we would like them to be. EVTOL aircraft have the opportunity to be much safer than helicopters,
yeah.
but, you know, people have to design them well and
yeah.
test them well and make sure that the things that they didn't think about will also
yeah.
Make them safer.
Brilliant. Now, do you think that this is going to happen, you know, pretty quickly, or, you know, like within 10 years, or what's, you know, because you and I were joking about this even in Anaheim. I mean, you know, people like to believe it's going to, there's a lot of doubters too, right? I mean, what's your thinking?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it still remains to be proven whether it is safer, quieter, less expensive, more productive,
mm-hmm.
More environmentally friendly.
Yeah.
All the studies indicate they will be. But in the end, you got, like I said, in order to do something useful, you got to make it cheap. You got to
mm-hmm.
make the people that operate them so they make money.
Yeah.
Or it's not going to provide a service to society. And that's the real question mark, is can you operate these and make money? Now, as far as the timeline, there are several companies who have said that they will be operational in 2024. So
okay.
in 3 years. There's several companies that say they're going to be flying passengers in these air shuttle or air taxi
mm-hmm.
missions. Maybe not all of them will make it 2024. Maybe
mm-hmm.
it'll take some of them another year or two.
Okay.
But, you know, in the next 4 to 5 years, there should be several different aircraft that have been certified as safe and
okay.
And begin operations.
And they're going to be carrying how many passengers?
So most of them are designed for a pilot plus 4 passengers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, there are some of those bigger and smaller, and obviously the smaller they are, if you can have just a single passenger one or 2 passengers, then that's easier to make those fly and
mm-hmm.
work.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some special regulations that allow a single seat, like for private ownership, or not for hire, so you couldn't use them as an air taxi.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some single-seat EVTOL aircraft that are under development that, in theory, somebody could buy and operate here just within the next few years.
Okay. Now, autonomous driving, or, you know, on the Earth, self-driving cars, call them,
right.
That was really thought to be, you know, viable, but Silicon Valley was really excited about that. And I kind of laughed. I said, you know, that's not going to happen. But, you know, we do have, I think I mentioned this last time, we'll repeat ourselves, but we do have an opportunity for autonomous flight up in the air, I would think, much more chance of it succeeding, because there's, you know, there's birds, there's a few things up there flying around, UFOs maybe, but, you know, there's not much to hit, and so there's, you know, you could probably get away with it. What do you think about autonomous? Because, you know, if you don't have a pilot and you're doing something short, it's short hike, you know, say you want to go from Fairfax to your home, right?
Yeah.
It might be possible.
Yeah, I mean, the technology is there to fly or drive autonomously, but it's the risk.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you get home and you only hit somebody every, you know, 1,000 trips, then, you know, that's pretty good, right?
Okay, yeah.
But it's not acceptable.
Yeah.
So it's really those cases where, you know, something happens that the computer wasn't expecting.
Okay.
I mean, there's... You know, there's like 35,000 people every year are killed in car accidents,
yeah.
right? And that's because of human pilots. But,
yeah.
you know, we all know there's been one crash where there was a car that autonomously, you know, that hit a person crossing the street.
Hmm.
And she was, I think, as I recall, she was
yeah.
in a wheelchair, and the wheels confused the thing, and the actual human driver wasn't paying attention.
Okay.
So autonomous vehicles can be much safer than human drivers, but, you know, they need to be they need to be tested out to that one in a billion case.
Right.
And then people need to accept the fact that there will be occasions where the computer will make a mistake or something happens that it doesn't expect and somebody will die.
Yeah.
But as compared to
35,000 a year.
35,000, which is 100 people, did I do that right? 100 people a day.
Yeah.
Being killed by human error.
Yeah. Well, that's an excellent point. I mean, we accept it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But you are correct. It's a lot less things go wrong in the air because you don't have to worry about somebody in a wheelchair crossing, or you don't have to worry about a kid running after a ball into the street and things like that. But if you have an accident, then it's much more catastrophic because,
of course, you're up in the air.
You have a good chance of falling and crashing, and that could be fatal.
Right. Well, I think you make a good point. You know, risk reward ratio there. It's very important.
And unfortunately, in this society, who are you going to sue?
Yeah.
is part of the calculus. If the computer makes a mistake, or something happens, the designer of that that car or that vehicle shouldn't have allowed that to happen. Mm-hmm. So then you sue the manufacturer.
Okay. Yeah.
As opposed to suing the driver.
That brings me to a really an interesting theoretical question. Really, the government regulators came about because we like to take risk, and before you know it, a lot of people are dying. So we have regulations. Now, is the FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, understanding that maybe they need to relax, and see if this is going to work? I mean, can you speak to that topic for a minute?
Sure. So, as I said, the goal is airliner safety, but that's not statistically almost impossible to actually achieve because with an airliner, it's a very, very controlled environment where everything's the same. There's really only two or three aircraft manufacturers off from all these known points. Everything's highly controlled. Whereas if you're I'll give an example. It's a helicopter, right? You're taking off from a helipad, and if you're doing EMS or, something, whatever, you may be landing someplace where nobody's ever landed before.
Yeah.
So that increases the uncertainty. And eVTOL aircraft what they call air taxi, but they're really shuttles.
Okay.
An eVTOL service is probably going to go back and forth between two known points.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's easy to design a system that won't fail, but then you have to test it so that when it does fail, you can correct for those situations. So
sure.
The FAA and the developers want designs that will be safe and so that nobody ever gets hurt.
Right.
And they're going to strive for that. And we all think that autonomy is a key part of that, but nobody is rushing to it.
Yeah.
And saying,
okay.
"Oh, I'm going to fly autonomous tomorrow with passengers in it."
Okay.
So it's got to be we got to design it so it's never going to fail, but then prove that it is indeed never going to fail.
Yeah. Now, if the Chinese have been the path breakers here, you told me that Americans also did it very early, but the Chinese are doing it now. Shouldn't we consult with them? And of course, I don't want to talk politics with you unless you want to. But we do have a problem with the Chinese government. At least folks in Washington are looking at the Chinese government as a problem. But, maybe it makes sense to have more cooperation with the Chinese or at least these firms. Can you speak to that?
Sure. So there's one main company that has developed an eVTOL aircraft and is extensively flying it, not only in China, but around the world. And that is, as you mentioned before, is EHang.
Mm-hmm.
And they've built a lot of aircraft. They've built hundreds of aircraft. They've tested them all over the world. They are flying passengers, not for revenue, but for demonstration purposes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's all within the approval allowances of China and the other countries where they've done that. They primarily fly it unmanned.
Mm-hmm.
So the configurations that they've the major configuration that they're flying is a multi-copter design, and there are very few companies or developers in the U.S. who are looking at multi-copters because they're really not efficient.
I see.
as far as forward flight. So they're good for short hops.
Okay. Forward flight, it's inefficient, obviously.
Right.
Okay.
And to be most efficient, you should have a propeller that not only can lift up, but also you need propellers that not only lift up, but also propellers that go forward. And
okay.
You need a wing, and that's how you're going to be, as I mentioned before, the inefficiency of a battery. You can aerodynamic lift is much, 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 maybe 100 times more efficient than powered lift, which you'd get from thruster. So
sure.
Now EHang and some of the other companies that are looking at multi-copters are now studying configurations with wings. So
okay.
EHang now has a small wing-borne aircraft, but I would say, and no disrespect to EHang, but they're at the lower end of the technology and capability scale, whereas U.S. and German and other other developers that are out in front are more complex, more advanced, and more higher performance configurations.
In other words, we're trying to do like the Hummingbird, and the Chinese have said, well, we're just going to do this, I don't know, what do you want to call it, vertical flight.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's
right.
A good analogy, but
no?
Yes,
okay.
We're looking, in general,
we're striving for a Hummingbird. Well, I'm joking.
Right.
Yeah, but I'm sorry to interrupt, but we want to combine vertical with forward flight, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And
yeah.
And they have that capability, but instead of being able to fly for, 10 minutes or 20 minutes with maybe it's 30 minutes with a two-seat multi-copter,
yeah.
Designs like Joby and Archer and Lilium and Beta are looking at wing designs that can carry a pilot and four or five or six passengers.
Okay. Well, combining, we can do a third, and we can talk the actual engineering and technology issues behind
sure.
it. But the technology of actually trying to combine or engineering trying to combine the two forms of flight is pretty tough, right? We've been trying to do it for decades now, and it's pretty nasty, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the hardest things to do is to vertical flight, designing a new aircraft is hard, but trying to design a vertical takeoff and landing aircraft is really hard. And then, all these new things, autonomous and electric and all these things, it just makes it really hard. And I used to tell when I would go back to schools and stuff like that, I'm like, if you want something easy, go into hypersonics. If you want a real challenge, you need to go into vertical flight, and that's where you're going to be
really
challenged
good.
Every
yeah.
day.
Yeah. Did you get kind of a weird look when you said that? That's
I don't
pretty
think
funny.
Believe me, but
yeah. No, that's great. Yeah, no, I remember Christophe. My final thought here, and you can get going, but. My son, Christophe, told me that he had heard that Donald Trump had thought that combining the two forms of flight was going to be impossible. I thought that was kind of interesting. And not that that's important comment from him, but I thought it was interesting. So there's probably a lot of people out there that thought early on that it was really not viable.
Absolutely.
I tend to think it's not viable, but so that maybe what am I to say? Okay.
Well, I will tell you, in 2013, when we started, when we realized that there was going to be this confluence of technologies and capabilities that was going to, what we thought was, and we call it the eVTOL revolution. We think it's a transformational capability
mm-hmm.
that electric power provides for vertical flight.
Mm-hmm.
But I would just tell people, look, you don't have to believe me, okay? I'm not going to try and convince you,
mm-hmm.
but it's going to happen, okay?
So yeah.
This, it would take me way too long to explain all the reasons and all the solutions because
mm-hmm.
on the surface of it, it's, especially, 7-8 years ago,
mm-hmm.
it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But now there are dozens of aircraft flying, large-scale aircraft that, people can fly in around the world that are demonstrating that, hey, this will actually work. And now, of course, we need to have enough data to certify them to be safe and put them into production. And then again, you need to make sure you can make money with them because having something that is too expensive that nobody can use or you just can't make a business case for it isn't going to help anybody.
Well, that goes back to the Hummingbird because he doesn't really have much of a payload.
That's
so,
right.
Like you say, you want to make money, and if you don't have much of a payload, you're not going to make much money. So that's
right.
The third topic of our interview. I mean, our third interview topic.
That would be great.
Excuse me. Okay. Well, Mike, it's great to talk to you. Good luck in D.C. And I used to live there when I was a young guy. It's a cool place, but you know that incident on July 6th, was it June 6th? It's kind of
January
6th. Yeah. It's kind of weird.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But you know,
that never happens again.
The two sides have to talk. All right. Well, look, Mike, I'll be in touch. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Tom.
All right. Bye bye.
Take care.